Farming with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics. Hello and welcome to the Robots Podcast, episode 143. My name is Jana, and this episode is the last podcast in our focus series on agricultural robotics. Today, we will hear about the roles robots may play in agriculture, from the greenhouse to the field. But first, as always, let's hear about the latest news and developments in robotics, from Christine.
Thanks, Jana. A slew of new robots was demonstrated at last week's IREX and IROS in Tokyo, Japan. Highlights included quadrocopters using strings for aerial construction, continuously learning to improve their movements when flying slaloms or hitting balls, and even swimming and rolling on their edge, equipped with a foam ring. Exoskeletons, including an upgraded version of Cyberdyne's exoskeleton, as well as a series of air pressure-driven versions, and a new version of iRobot's Roomba vacuum cleaner, supposedly cleaning up to 50% more dirt. In other news, Nasdaq's closing bell was rung by the first non-human on Tuesday. The robot was a Universal Robots UR5 robot arm, equipped with a three-fingered gripper from Schunk. The special closing ceremony marked the launch of the new robotic stock index RoboStocks, with a corresponding exchange-traded fund with a fitting ticker symbol, Robo. The launch of the RoboStocks Fund may well mark a turning point for the field of robotics, from a past where most robots were found in research labs to a future where robots are developed with an eye on mass market instead of universities, and where robots are everyday objects in our homes, offices, hospitals, and manufacturing environments. For more information on the highlights from IREX and IROS, as well as the new RoboStocks, visit us at robohub.org.
Robots have the potential to play various roles in farming and agriculture. David Dorhout is a graduate of Iowa State University who has always been interested in robotics, agriculture, and biotechnology. His company, Dorhout R&D LLC, is a research and development business that designs and builds robotic systems with a special interest in robotics for agriculture. Our interviewer Ron spoke to David about his robots Aquarius, a greenhouse watering robot, and Prospero, an autonomous microplanter.
If I can welcome you to the podcast, if I can firstly get you to introduce yourself to the listeners and outline the background of what you're doing to us.
Yeah, hi. My name is David Dorhout, and I work on building agricultural robots, both field robots like Prospero and indoor greenhouse robots like Aquarius that does greenhouse watering.
As you pointed out, this is not the first agricultural robot you worked on. Prospo, it's a hexapod robot. Did you take this robot any further than what I've seen on your website?
Yeah. So we haven't developed it any further than what's on the website. We've worked on kind of the next steps for the design of Prospero, but we haven't actually been working on kind of the second phase in the Prospero scenario. We've been working on building the Aquarius robot, and part of the reason for that is to develop a swarm of autonomous robots that would be able to go throughout a field and be able to do the farming, the planting, so the planting, then the tending, and then the harvesting. Would just create more, would require more of a budget than what we have right now. We're kind of a bootstrap operation.
From the original YouTube pitch that you made, you were talking about the spraying side, the seeding, the weeding, the concepts. Have you created another pitch? Have you extended your research? What have you found out since then?
Yeah, So the next phase from Prospero, which is a robot that was whose purpose was to experiment on different mechanisms for planting a seed, so being able to determine where a seed needed to be planted in the field, to be able to communicate with the other robots in a group, and then be able to plant that seed at the correct depth and seed spacing. The next phase would be a robot whose specialty would be on the tending phase. So this would be a robot that would be in the field kind of right after you finish planting, all the way up to harvest time. So it'd be responsible for weeding the field, for planting any kind of micronutrients throughout the season that might be needed. And for that robot, one of the really exciting things that I can tell you what, but I can't tell you exactly, or I can't tell you how, because it's kind of a secret. But and I should take a step back that at the basic basis of Prospero and the concept of swarm farming is that you can have simple rules and you can have really complex behavior that arises from these rules. We know this is absolutely true from insect behavior, where you can have a colony of ants and they just have very simple rules for foraging or so, but you can have really complex behavior and you can have a mega organism that kind of essentially arises from that. And so from this, we can give our robots, our weeding robots, a really simple rule. And just kind of looking at the picture a little bit different from an aspect of trying to identify all the weeds, we can more accurately just go and say and identify what the what plants should be there and then remove those plants that aren't there. And we can do that actually with some really inexpensive sensors. Yeah, we haven't actually built the robot, but I'm confident that it's a really simple concept and stuff.
I guess, extending to that, did you get any feedback from the farmers? Were there any other interested parties? Did you discover more from chatting to them?
Yeah, so it's been a really interesting response from a lot of farmers. I kind of didn't really know what the response would be. I now work full-time building robots, but until just a few months ago, I actually worked in the ag industry in the biotech. So I have about 14 years of field experience, so I was working with a lot of farmers. And last summer, we actually even took Prospero to an agricultural tech show up in Canada and had a couple thousand farmers come by. And it was actually a really positive response from a lot of farmers. I think a lot of farmers, they understand that the current way that agriculture is, where you have a farmer who literally sits with inside the machine and then it's kind of just the brains of the machine, but they're kind of, they can't do as much. They're limited in their day to driving this machine back and forth around the field. And so anything that would allow that farmer to be able to concentrate more on the business and the science of the farming, farmers just really grab a hold of that. I think one of the great modern things is cell phones with farmers. And farmers are always on their cell phone talking to each other and just kind of communicating what's working for them, what's not, and stuff. And so a robot that would allow a farmer to instruct, to give them instructions, and then send out into the field to execute those instructions in Prospero, and using a swarm of autonomous farmers, is that they're able to give instructions, simple rules for the robots to follow, and then for the robots to actually carry out those instructions without having to be constantly monitored. And that way the farmer can spend more of their time on the business side of farming, which is just as critical as actual agricultural side. And I don't know of any farmer who doesn't spend at least 10% of their time experimenting on doing different things, or just trying to get that edge to just grow more. And so the reaction at the Veg Tech Expo from young farmers, farmers in their 20s and 30s, to farmers who had retired in their 70s and 80s who came just to see Prospero. You know, it was just really encouraging. And I think that's one of the things that we kind of forget about farming is that we might think of it as being kind of quaint, something that our grandparents or people in black and white photos did, but farming has always been at the very forefront of technology. I mean, it's bleeding.
Now I see that you're prototyping this concept greenhouse watering robot. How does it differ to things like drips and the conventional way of doing things? What are the benefits that you see? Kind of describe your new robot, in fact.
Sure. Aquarius is a new type of robot. It's a greenhouse robot that's meant to be able to precisely water plants in the greenhouse. And it does this. It's real simple. You just lay down a piece of tape, and the robot follows that. You just put the robot on the tape, turn it on, self-calibrates itself, and it starts driving. There's one other switch that the greenhouse operator can use. And it's just a little dial that the greenhouse operator can use to select the pot size, or rather just the maximum amount of water that they would want the plant to receive. Because as Aquarius is driving through the greenhouse, it has these little sensor whiskers on the side, and it will touch a little sensor that's actually in the pot. The sensor itself is doesn't have any electronics in it. All the electronics are on the robot. And as it drives past the robot, it reads the moisture sensor, so it knows how much, what the soil moisture is like in the pot, and then it will calculate how much water to apply to that plant. And it can do that on both sides while it's driving through the greenhouse, and it doesn't stop. When we were looking at different solutions, all these greenhouse rooms are equipped with drip lines. And in different parts of the greenhouse facility, we use drip lines. But those are on plants that are static. We never move those around, and they're also not nearly as valuable. Each of those plants is worth maybe $5 or something like that. And other parts of the greenhouse are actually completely automated, like they have in the Netherlands with flower production, where the entire room moves. But what we needed, though, was a flexible solution that would allow us to move these plants around. These were corn plants, and so they have a lifespan of about 3 months, and in that 3 months we'll move them maybe 12 times, either within the room or between rooms or between buildings. And so looking at drip lines, we just couldn't, they just weren't flexible enough, so we didn't want to spend all the time setting them up. And then even if we did set them all up, sometimes they clog, and we couldn't allow a plant to die just because each of these plants is too valuable. Just to kind of give you an idea of scale, cost scale, about 100 of those plants would pay for one Aquarius, and each room would have about 1,000 plants in it, and then there are 6 rooms, so... made sense to try to build a robot that would be able to do that precision watering for us, instead of having to have a person walk through and pick up literally each plant and then water it the correct amount.
Have you had interest outside of the place that you tested the machine? What kind of problems did you encounter with that? What kind of problems are you solving on the fly?
Yeah, so with Aquarius, one of the things was we wanted to make it really simple to operate, and we wanted it to be obvious to anybody who was working with it what, if it wasn't working properly, just what was wrong. And so we intentionally went pretty low tech on it. We didn't choose any ultrasonic rangefinders or infrared or anything like that. To detect the pots or where the robot should go in the room, because a lot of times the ambient sunlight can kind of cause one of those to work, be more sensitive or less sensitive. And just to know how far away they should put the pot to the robot. We wanted it to be just kind of a fixed amount, so they always knew that just put the pot 6 inches away or 8 inches away from the tape, and then you're good to go. So just to make it, and that's why we just have a bump plate on the front of the robot, and that's an emergency kill switch, so the robot won't go wild running through the greenhouse and crash into plants or anything like that. And if it does stop, because it did bump into a pot, it's really obvious that, oh, it's touching the pot. So we want it to be simple and intuitive to operate. That's why there's literally just two switches, the on-off switch, and then the pot selection switch. The other challenge that we had with building Aquarius is these rooms are not flat. The rooms are actually pitched, and that's for water drainage. And so you have this robot that, when it's fully loaded, weighs about 500 pounds or about 230 kilograms or so. And so you have to have it so it's moving at a nice, slow, steady pace, going up and then also down. And so to do that, we over-engineered the robot, and we used very industrious electric motors. They're actually the same motors are used in power chairs. And so that robot can, even fully loaded with 500 pounds, go up and down and then do that skid steering around corners without perceptibly changing its velocity. And the way that we do that is we have two sets of industrial optical encoders mounted onto both wheels. And so the robot is 10 times a second. It's actually checking to see what its speed is. And so it has a speed limit. You can think of it as a speed limit. And it wants to be within 10% of that speed limit, whatever it is. And if it's going less than what it should be, then it actually gives it more power. If it's going quicker than what it needs to be, then it gives it less power. And the motor controller that we have has a regenerative braking, so while it's actually slowing down, say going down a hill, it's recharging the batteries at the same time. But what this means is that the power to each wheel is dynamically controlled, so a person like me who weighs almost 300 pounds can just jump onto the side of the robot while it's going up a hill, and instead of the robot just kind of skidding because there's a lot more weight on the one wheel, it instantly compensates itself and it just keeps going straight. So that was one of the really kind of exciting things, is to get that dynamic power to work just right, and to make it so that you could literally just put it on a piece of tape in the room, going over grates and everything, and it just follows. And yeah, it's pretty exciting just to, the first time I just sat there and watched it drive around the room for about an hour and a half. And
So rolling back, the advantage of your machine is not only the automation of it, but the fact that you're alleviating some labor involved, some long-term labor, and I guess you would also be addressing the fact that you can water it night. So it's 24/7?
Yeah. So Aquarius, it's equipped with the batteries that it has. It can drive approximately 14 miles fully loaded before it needs to be recharged. And what would be possible to do, and it's coded for this, is you could have it travel around the greenhouse, its loop, and then once it gets to, say, a stop sign, which would be just a different colored tape on the ground, it would pause there for however long it needed to be. The Aquarius that you see in the video, it doesn't have a switch to do that, but that's all in the code for the robot itself. And so one of the great things, of course, is it's reliable. So it's actually going through and watering, detecting each pot, and it's watering each pot. So if you're in a situation where you want to make sure each plant is properly cared for, and you don't have to, the greenhouse facility that we're testing in would have to have, rotating shifts cover the weekends. And so a robot like this would be able to just take care of all the watering on the weekends. So even if you wanted to have personnel watering the plants during the week, you could have it just water the plants on the weekends and remove that. So it's a huge time saver and labor saver for greenhouses.
Okay.
Allowing the greenhouse people to, in our case, focus more on the sampling of the plants for genetic tests and stuff, rather than having to make sure that they're watering every 8 or every 6 hours or so.
So have you had much interest in your system? Have you taken it to any other shows?
Yeah, so we took it to the Canadian show last year. It wasn't quite all the way finished. And the main robot that we were showing, the reason why we were brought up there was Prospero. So Aquarius was kind of in the shadows of the little Prospero. And actually just kind of recently, just in the last week or so, or last couple weeks, we've been starting to promote Aquarius a little bit. But marketing is not necessarily my strong suit. And the target market, too, for Aquarius was high-value greenhouse crops and stuff, and in particular the place that I was working at before.
All right. So what's next? What's on the drawing board? Are you looking at other aspects of this? As you said, the ability possibly to do the sampling that you spoke about, or look for diseases to let one of the operators know that there's a plant with a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm working on a couple other robots. I tend not to tell anybody about them, except for my wife and my family and stuff, because they probably can't do anything but hear me talk about them. There are a couple challenges to building agricultural robots. One of them is that in order to be able to build a weeding robot, you have to actually have the weeds in order to do your testing. If you're building a walking robot, that's really easy to test because you can always have ground to test on. But with a weeding robot or so, you have a very narrow window of just a few months during which the weeds are at the right stage and stuff. And actually, you can even narrow that more down to immediately before and after planting. There's a short window there that you'd be in a realistic scenario for a weeding robot, because once the plants are mature, typically you plant corn or soybeans or anything like that at high enough density that it would crowd out most of the weeds.
Weeding, I take it, herbicide sprays, etc., is a big dollar thing to save the amount to try and keep crops and harvest costs right down would be a huge benefit.
One of the great benefits of mechanically destroying a weed, so instead of using herbicides that are, because there's some legality as to how you apply herbicides. You can't apply herbicides in a way that's different from the label. And I don't know if that's on the label rate or what, but one of the main challenges with weed control or insect control, which is what I'm really familiar with, is herbicide resistance. And that's when you have weeds that, over time, the population of, say, a weed has been sprayed with a particular herbicide. Well, there's just always been a couple members of that population that are resistant or tolerant to herbicide spray, but there's never been any selection pressure, so those genes in that population never concentrate. Well, if you start to spray a field with the weeds, then you start to select, so only the weeds that are resistant to herbicide are able to survive. Over time, over many years, or even just, depending on the species, a few years, you can start to have resistant populations of those weeds. So then all of a sudden, all your time and your money spent with transforming the plants to be resistant to, say, Roundup or glyphosate, that's kind of lost, because the weeds are resistant to herbicide, just like your plants are. If you do a mechanical destruction, so you pull the weed, or you have blade or something that kind of grinds the weed up that mechanically destroys it, there's not a genetic way to overcome that outside of developing armor or something like that. So probably a great a market for weeding robots would be if there's areas that start to have high populations of herbicide-resistant plants where there just aren't any other herbicides to kill those weeds, aside from just high-value crops like vegetables.
Right, right. That's a very interesting area, and requires a bit of research, I would take. Okay, from the podcast, I'd like to thank you very much for your time and look forward to seeing more of your devices on the internet. Okay.
Thanks, Ron.
And that's it for today. If you've missed any of the other episodes on agricultural robotics, you can find them and all our other past episodes on robotspodcast.com. As always, the next episode will air in 2 weeks' time. Until then, goodbye. Farming with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.